Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, joined, as I'm very pleased to say, we have the privilege of being each week by Gordon Chang. You find his outstanding columns at Forbes.com and WorldAffairsJournal.com. Also, you'll see him frequently at Fox News and in other media outlets. He is indeed one of our country's preeminent experts and go-to guys on matters involving Asia. His books on North Korea taking on the world and China and its coming collapse are required reading in this space. Gordon, as always, it's great to have you with us. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you so much, Frank. I mean, I think you were too kind, but I'm not going to argue.
Yeah, let me insist. Gordon, we were talking earlier in the program with Admiral Ace Lyons about what is happening militarily in the Western Pacific, and specifically I was probing him on what he makes of the implications of a rather extraordinary buildup that seems to be in evidence now on China's part with respect to its naval forces. You and I have been talking about this for a while, but this is now beginning to manifest itself in ways that are clearly causing neighbors like India concern, as well as the Japanese. Talk a bit, if you would, about the prospect that China's now rather considerable naval presence and power projection capabilities will change the sort of strategic environment in the Western Pacific.
Well, China is building up its armed forces, but especially its navy, its undersea forces. The submarines are increasing at a rapid pace, and not only in number, but also in capability. We have the beginning of nuclear deterrence patrols on the part of the Chinese, but we also have the development of weapons that can only be considered offensive in nature, such as their anti-ship cruise missiles, some of which are supersonic. The United States really has no defense for those, and so this is perhaps maybe not a game changer, but extremely close to it. Clearly, at this point, the United States and countries around the region, from India to Japan to Indonesia, Philippines, Vietnam, they all are concerned about the trajectory of what China is doing.
Are we adequately concerned about the trajectory of what China is doing, as you put it? Some 60 hulls under construction at the moment would, in short order, outstrip not only our production of naval warships, but the entire inventory of U.S. Navy ships. And as Rick Fisher described with us last week, these are not just numerically impressive activities, but the quality of such platforms seems to be very, very ominous as well.
The concern in the United States is there, but it's not nearly at the level that it needs to be. You know, right now, I think that there is a growing appreciation of not only the buildup in the Chinese military, but also the intentions of Chinese leaders. And this is only new. We should have been thinking about this decades ago, because the Chinese were doing things in the region that were troubling its neighbors, and we were sloughing this off. You know, at this point, I think that we are too far behind the game, and we got to understand that the Chinese will have not only superior forces in the Asia-Pacific region, but they will have a navy that probably will be larger than ours in all fronts, considering both surface and submarine combatants. So clearly this is something that the United States has not been adequately alarmed about.
Yeah. And I think it's fair to say, Gordon, that the projection of power by that formidable naval capability will not be confined to the Western Pacific. I mentioned India. Talk, if you would, a little bit about some thinking you've been doing about the need the Indians see for submarines and where they are likely to have that need met.
The Indians have a much better appreciation for the submarine threat that China poses in the Indian Ocean and elsewhere. They are now going in the process of tendering for submarines. They're going about it probably a little bit too slowly because they have a make or buy in India program that is really slowing down their ability to acquire submarines. Their yards building submarines are just not good enough. And I think that essentially the Modi government needs to go back to what the previous government was thinking of doing, and that is just buying submarines off the shelf from others. And they should be looking at Japan, because Japan, the Soryu class, which Australia will be acquiring soon, is really very silent, very deadly, and I think is probably adaptable to Indian weapons, though there do need to be some adjustments. The thing about China in the Indian Ocean is not just that it's flooding and surging its vessels into that body of water, but it's also building facilities that look like military bases, and one of those is at Walvis Bay in the South Atlantic, just at the, where the Atlantic meets the Indian Ocean. This it not only threatens India, but it also threatens the United States, because we're talking about the shipping on our eastern seaboard will become within range of China's vessels and perhaps its aircraft in the not-too-distant future.
Gordon Chang is our guest. You find his writings at Forbes and the World Affairs Journal, and also in book-length form in Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World and the Coming Collapse of China. Gordon, what I'm interested in is some of the thinking that you've been doing, and clearly the Indians have been doing, about how to both compete with and deal with China. Beyond the naval considerations that you've just described, what is the state of Indian and Chinese relations at the moment more broadly?
Right now, India is looking east, which is its policy it's had since the 1990s. But now it's starting to move towards an Act East policy, which is much more assertive, trying to build relations with countries not only around the South China Sea, but also the East China Sea. And this has really been in response to the Chinese looking at the Indian Ocean as theirs. So we have both India and China competing on a much broader stage right now, and the Indians are concerned about Chinese intentions in a way that we should have been concerned decades ago. Right now, India is looking at what it can do to build friends in a very big region stretching from Africa on one side to Japan and South Korea on the other. So it shows increasing ambitions and a willingness to defend itself.
Yeah. Gordon, let me just conclude by asking you, against the backdrop of this military buildup and clearly a very aggressively expansionistic sort of policy more broadly on the part of the Chinese, you continue to see evidence that their economy is in serious trouble. Indeed, you've written about the death rattle of the Chinese economy. Talk about where you see that at the moment and how it might bear on these other strategic considerations.
Yeah, China's National Bureau of Statistics reported that growth in the first quarter of this year was 7.0%. But the economy may actually have been contracting when we look at electricity, which was down 0.1%, trade down 6.0%, and construction starts down 18.4%. But the most important thing is the decline in foreign exchange reserves, which was an astounding $113 billion in the first quarter. I'm concerned that as Chinese generals and admirals and political leaders see a narrowing window for them, that they could very well lash out, because their economy will not be able to support their ambitions, including their military ambitions, at least in the long run. And so we have to be worried that they will decide to act now while they still have the initiative.
We're just out of curiosity, Gordon, do you think that all those billions of dollars in foreign currency reserves went? Is this in some form or fashion tied up with one of the other things we talk about frequently, namely China's play for a reserve currency, or is this capital flight, or what's going on?
Well, there certainly is capital outflow, and much of it is indeed capital flight. Right now, China's foreign currency reserves, you know, mostly in dollars, but they've got a lot in euros, which means that they're sustaining losses. And also, they've used their reserves to make investments, and some of those investments are not paying off. So I don't think that they actually have the $3.7 trillion that they claim in ready assets. China is in much weaker condition than most people suspect, and this is going to affect the way Chinese leaders are acting. Right now, they appear to be panicking with their moves to flood the economy with liquidity, as we saw a couple days ago when the central bank reduced what's known as the reserve requirement ratio, releasing about $200 billion into the Chinese economy. That's a sign of desperation.
Yeah. Panic is not generally a good thing, especially if you are in fact feeling that this may be the closing window for you to lash out and perhaps prop up your regime through the social engineering technique of claiming foreign threats that justify your repression at home. Gordon Chang, as always, your insights are deeply appreciated. We'll look forward to talking with you again next week. In the meantime, keep it up at Forbes, Fox, and World Affairs Journal. Talk with you soon. Next up, Nick Adams. We're going to talk with him about what's going on down under and the lessons of Australia's immigration policies for ours. More straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.